March 3rd, 2014, Ljubljana, Slovenia, relevant and relatable ISKCON environmental scanning part two.
All right, we are ready for part two. And hopefully you have your stapled papers. And in your stapled papers, you will find the section, I believe it's in the back of the stapled paper, the end of the stapled papers, called Overview. If you could please locate that. It will make it much easier for you to follow what we're doing, because you'll be able to see everything at once. All right. So just a little review. As Prabhupada says, some more people who need stapled papers. If you need stapled papers, please raise your hand. Look at that. All right, so we're just going to a quick review then. As Prabhupada says here in the purport to 7.19 Bhagavatam, according to one's attitude, Krishna becomes one's direct advisor, or Krishna becomes unknown according to our receptivity. So we want to have an open mind, open heart, and open will. Again, we want to have an open mind so that we are willing to learn what's happening, what are people doing, what do they actually care about. An open heart so we can understand what's driving people, how are they feeling, not just what are they doing, and so we can understand how Krishna's feeling. And an open will, so we will take this knowledge, both head and heart, and we will apply it. Now, this is another way of presenting it. This part is external, sense perceptions and logic. Here's internal connection with Krishna. We identify present and emerging trends. That's surface. What's happening on the surface? Critique trends and drivers for relevance. What's underneath what's happening? What's driving it? What are the attitudes? What are the needs? Now here we're coming to internal. Recognize what's happening in the present. Understand the emerging future. And plan and do what's relevant and relatable. Now, as I said before, that generally, in most materialistic organizations, they're just doing this. Okay? They're just doing these three. They're not also doing these two. So many times we get involved in strategy in this external realm. But we also, if we're going to plan strategy, we also need to get into the internal realm. Okay, if you go right from looking at the trends and drivers right to planning, then you're going to end up with these assumptions. You're not going to be challenging assumptions. You're not going to be challenging biases. So this is, we often, again, I don't know why. Why? I'm not really asking the question, but I'm just expressing my frustration that sometimes, you know, we go out in the world and learn something from management, and then we just copy-paste what's done in a materialistic management plan. But we're not a materialistic society. So we have a tendency either to just ignore the knowledge out in the realm of organizational theory and management and just say that has nothing to do with us, we're a spiritual society. Or we just copy-paste it and think we're going to apply a materialistic system to a spiritual society. Whereas really we have to have a spiritual system. Now, I want to emphasize, before we start going on to the steps, each one of us can just do this ourselves. We don't need, we're going to talk about having teams and having processes. It is entirely possible for each of us as individuals to go through this basic step without a team and to make our own programs and our own preaching so much more relevant and relatable and so much more connected with Krishna and with the hearts of all the people that we're serving. Why do we suggest that we have a team? Because when we have a team, we're much, much more likely to challenge our assumptions and biases. We're much more likely to get past that illusion and cheating that we're not even aware that we're doing. But if you can't get a team together, it's not that you say, well, can't get a team together, nice seminar, can't apply it. It's something you can do even yourself. Okay, we're going now to the overview. This is the basic overview, and hopefully all of you have the staple papers, and you should please turn to the section, I believe it's right at the end of your staple papers, that has the overview. Okay? You also should have a separate piece of paper that's just one paper that has a summary of the whole system. You don't have that. You don't have just that one page, one separate unstapled page? No, there's another unstapled page you should have as well. No, another one. Okay, is that clear? Everybody have this? Yes? I love one-page references. I noticed that Rupa Goswami does this a lot. Rupa Goswami just gives like a list, and then he gives the list again with details. So you have just the quick list of the 64 angas, and then you have details about each one. You have the list of Krishna's qualities, and then you have the description of each one. So following Rupa Goswami's teaching model, you have your one-page, quick, handy reference guide, and then you have your whole overview. All right, so decide what you want to know more about. What do you want to know more about? What interests you? Do you want to know more about how the Grihasthas are living? Do you want to know about people's musical interests? Do you want to know about the occupations that people are doing? What do you want to know that's relevant to your service? Then assemble a diverse team with a leader. Again, you can do this alone. It's just be aware that if you do this alone, that it's much more difficult to even be aware of what our own biases are. Then the team makes a decision about how they're going to share information. Each team sets a schedule to gather information, share what they're learning, have regular periodic meetings to understand the deeper trends, and then have a system to put things into action. Okay, what are the kind of areas that we might want to know more about? Okay, we might want to know about religious or spiritual organizations and the environment they're operating in. What kind of services are we providing and how might they change? I think it was, 15 years ago when the North American Strategic Planning Team got together and our GBC came back to our temple and had a list of 17 areas of service that ISKCON was providing. And I remember asking our GBC, where's primary and secondary education on the list? And he said, it's not there. So I wasn't so happy with that. But we might want to know more about what services are we providing, something more about the people that we're serving, their expectations, what are issues are coming up that might affect people, political issues, economic issues, environmental issues. What are technologies, emerging technologies that might affect us? As I brought up, we were about 10 years behind the e-book market. The BBT was about 10 years behind the e-book market. And emerging shifts in anything that's part of what we regularly do. Okay, can anyone give me some specific things that we might want to know in any of these areas? What are some specific things we might want to know some more information about? I mean, one of them is what this whole conference was all about. Hey, everybody, there's a lot of money out there for what we're doing. And we're realizing that most of the people in the Hare Krishna movement have no idea that there's thousands and millions and billions. One of these funds had 80 billion euros. I was just, whoa. You know, that there's all this money available for Rathyatras. You know, for prasadam distribution, for book publishing, for classes, for travel. And you can see that in most places, people are not even asking that question. You follow? They're not even saying, is there any money available for Rathyatras? So what other things might we ask? What are some other examples of things that we might want to know in these areas? Yes?
Education.
Education. All right, can you give me something specific we might want to know about education?
How do people these days like to get educated?
All right, what are the ways in which people are getting educated? Is that rapidly changing?
Yes.
Very rapidly changing. Yes?
What are the methods employed in education?
What methods are being employed in education? All right, what other specific things might we want to know? You think about in your areas of service. Yes?
Hare Krishna, I noticed that many devotees are unemployed.
Okay.
To help them find a job. Or many devotees are like, you know, just one parent and children, and they would maybe need some support for spiritual...
Okay, so things we might want to know are maybe changing employment opportunities and the situation with employment in the country in which we live. We also might want to know about changing family demographics. That is huge. When Srila Prabhupada first left India, most people were still getting married, and most people were still getting married by the time they were 25 at the latest. You know, Prabhupada came from a culture where pretty much everyone was married, and he was coming to a culture where people were getting married. That's just not true anymore. Just isn't true. People are not getting married, or they're getting married very late, and they're getting married multiple times, and that's becoming a trend all over the world. So we're having, you know, more and more people raising children alone. And people having also in occupations. People used to get trained for one occupation when they were young, and then they would have that occupation lifelong. That's not the case anymore. And people are having to find different ways of being employed. And these things affect our current members, and they affect our potential members. Okay, what other specific things might we want to be aware of?
The political situation of the country at that moment.
Definitely. What are the politics going on in the country? That has a huge effect on what we can do to preach, what we can do to print books, on the tax laws, and to know how these things are shifting. So we don't get taken by surprise and all of a sudden everything we're doing is in jeopardy. What else might we want to be aware of? Yes?
What kind of trends in culture?
Trends in culture, yeah. Can you give me some specifics?
Music.
Music, changes in music. Okay, what else?
Reading habits.
That is also huge. Especially since our society is based to a large extent on books and distributing books. You know, and I'll just frankly say that in general, we are not really taking advantage of the change in reading habits. It's as if we're pretending there isn't any change in reading habits. Yes, something else.
Eating habits.
Oh, wow. Yes, eating habits. In fact, I was in a grocery store in America a few months ago, And I asked the woman in the store, where can I find the spices? And she just gave me this funny look. I said, you know, the spices. And she takes me to the ketchup and the mustard. People don't cook anymore. I mean, seriously, people do not cook. They don't cook. They eat at restaurants, or they buy prepared food, or what people call cooking is not what we call cooking. You know, they buy semi-prepared food and combine it. And that's what they call cooking. And this is also a huge change that's happened in society and how people are going to relate to what does it mean to cook and what does it mean to offer your food. Okay, what are some other things we might want to look at?
Communication habits.
This field, this is changing so rapidly that it's hard to keep up with it. And, you know, the way that, and to think that the way that we communicated 10 years ago is the way everyone's going to keep communicating is absurd. And we're a movement of communication. How are people communicating, and what's, again, the emerging future? To be aware of the future as it emerges. That we should be ready with our preaching to take advantage of these changes in communication as they happen. Okay, what else might we be really interested in?
Management.
There's a huge change in how organizations are being managed. Huge change. I mean, something I recently read a book about the art of apologizing. And I also recently had an experience, how can I do this without being too specific? These things get recorded, you know, so I have to be a little careful about this. So I was dealing with some devotees somewhere in the world with some project, and the leader of the project very clearly, unambiguously made a mistake. It wasn't some huge moral mistake. It wasn't, you know, we'll go to jail to miss, but it was a mistake. It was a mistake, and it caused a lot of grief for some people, and it caused some people to leave the project. So one of the devotees in the project wrote in an email just to the management team, it wasn't a public email, saying that one of the good things would be if the manager would write an apology. And one of the other members of the management team said, how dare you suggest that the manager apologize? Managers should never have to apologize. If the manager apologizes, then no one in the organization will have any respect for him anymore. And this is the way that people in general in the world used to think. But this is changing. And it's changing quite rapidly. And in general, how organizations are managed, the relationships between the superiors and the subordinates, is again changing very rapidly. Okay, what other kinds of specific things might we be interested in? Yes? Okay, looking at ways of having your own business. And the ways of having your own business are also changing very quickly. You know, it's possible. I was recently at the home of some devotees who live away from any kind of big city. They live in a remote area when they're the only people preaching in that area. And they have their own business, and they do it almost entirely over the internet. I think once a week they travel to a city. And there's many different ways of becoming self-employed, and there's many ways of living simply and having a flexible schedule that weren't available 5 years or 10 years ago. All right, now again, I keep emphasizing this, but we really need to become as aware as possible of what we are not aware of. I mean, maybe, how do I do that? Well, first being aware that there's things I'm not aware of. I am daily amazed, surprised, flabbergasted, astonished, and sometimes nauseated by the fact that even people who are devotees think they know everything. People who are devotees, they think, I know everything. Whatever I think is right, and I know everything, and anyone who doesn't agree with me is a fool. And I'm just really amazed that you can be in the Hare Krishna movement and think like that, but evidently it's quite easy, and I felt like that too, so I'm not going to what to say. So how are we going to get rid of our blind spots? Well, first of all, be aware that we have one, that we have many, or two, or ten. And to try to get a team of people from diverse backgrounds. Again, if you can't do this, doing a scan on your own is better than not doing a scan at all. But it's far better to have work with a group of people that's going to have different points of view. So some examples of this. There's going to be a different perspective from management and non-management. Now, many years ago I was a teacher, and then I became a school principal and a teacher. The day I became the school principal, my perspective changed radically. Just radically. All of a sudden, I saw the school as a whole. And I realized that the teachers and the parents simply didn't have that vision. But you want to have both. Because what happens when you're in management for a long time is you lose touch with how the people who aren't in management think. And the people who aren't in management really don't have a clue as to how management thinks. People who live in temples and congregation. Very different perspectives, very different needs. Both seniors and juniors. I'm a member of a group of devotees that give advice to management, and we were really pressured. Your group should only be made of seniors. But that's not the only perspective. Both renunciates and householders. So recently I became aware of a group of devotees trying to teach about culture, but everybody on that group is a renunciate. And somebody brought out, well, I thought culture is, you know, all four ashrams. So you want to have renunciates and householders, and you want to have people who've been lifetime renunciates and people who've been renunciates after household life. It's quite a different perspective, and maybe both men and women. We'll erase that one. Yeah, let's cross that one out. Surprisingly, men and women have different perspectives on things. Yes? And we do. We see things differently. We have a little bit different lens. And it's a good idea to see from both perspectives. You know, I sometimes joke that if women had been the leaders of the movement, then instead of the Prabhus and the Matajis, it would be the Prabhus and the Sons. You didn't get that, huh? No? Prabhupada said the men should see the women as mothers, and the mothers should see the women should see the men as the sons. See? But because we have male leaders, they think, okay, we just see the women as mothers, and we see the men as the Prabhus. But if the women were in charge of ISKCON, we would have had the Prabhus and the sons. Yes? Yeah. I guess that was too hot of a topic. All right. So Another demarcation would be those who were born as devotees and those who came as adults, because that's also a very different perspective. People born in the movement do not see things the same way as people who join as adults. They just don't. People born in the movement have a very different psychology. So it's best to have a team that has all these different groups on it, as much as you possibly can. And if you don't have one of these groups, realize you're missing a perspective. Now, it's also a really good idea to intentionally include some people who are a little weird. Some people who are a little out of the mainstream. Some people who are willing to come up with a very different perspective, some highly divergent thinkers. Okay, I know this is like really radical.
Mad people.
Huh? Well, it's interesting, if you go to Vrindavan, every 10th person at least is eccentric. Have you noticed that in Vrindavan? Somehow, you know, being a Gaudiya Vaishnava seems that we seem to have a high tolerance for eccentricity. So, but you really don't want to have just everybody who's just, yes, I follow the party line all the time. Yes, I do. You want to have some people who can think a little bit out of the system. When we talk, Krishna willing, we're going to be giving a seminar on organizational culture and organizational structure. Yes? Right? Thursday and Friday morning, that's the plan. And then we'll be discussing, if you really want to understand the culture of an organization, you have to have both insiders and outsiders. You can't just have insiders and you can't just have outsiders. So it's good to have somebody on your team who's, not that they have to be, you know, crazy, but they should be a little bit of a divergent thinker, somebody who's a little bit of a maverick. All right, now this is a service for very brahminical devotees. This is not secretarial service. This is not a service you can just give to people who just, you know, follow some sort of a pattern. You have to be very thoughtful. You have to be very open. You have to be able to look for trends. You have to be able to understand underlying emotions. You have to be able to understand things that are out of your paradigm. You have to be able to recognize your own paradigm. So doing this service is really meant for highly brahminical people. Right? And ideally, you have a team leader. And the team leader is someone who knows how to work with the brahminical team in a brahminical fashion. So when we talk about organizational culture on Thursday and Friday, we'll also be talking about what's brahminical culture, what's kshatriya culture, what's vaishya culture, what's shudra culture. So brahminical culture is very much a consensus, team, fluid, divergent culture. Because remember, when you're trying to find out what's going on, you're having to break the biases and the assumptions that you don't even know are there. So the more that the team leader can encourage this sort of behavior among the group, the more you're going to find out what's the truth. So what groups are you going to look at? So we want to look at, of course, the world in general. Then we want to look at various religious and spiritual organizations. You know, Catholics, Protestants, all different Christian groups, Buddhists, Muslim. And we want to look at particularly Eastern groups and particularly Eastern non-Hindu, Hindu, Vaishnavas that are not ISKCON. And then, of course, Vaishnavas that are ISKCON. We don't want to limit our scanning only to ISKCON. But why are we focusing here? Obviously, we're coming, you know, closer and closer to who we are. Is that clear with everybody? So these are the groups that we're going to scan. You know, here when we're talking about spiritual organizations, we're talking like New Age organizations. And then Eastern, we're looking at like maybe Buddhists. Now, we can also look in terms of categories. So this is typical categories. If you look at regular, you know, corporations, organizations, they talk about doing this very steep, V-steep, V-S-T-E-E-P. You want to look at changes in people's values. Have there been radical changes in values in the world in the last 5 to 10 years? Very much so. Very much. Changes in social issues. We were talking about what's happened with marriage. Changes in technology. I mean, again, that these are just huge things. In the environment and the ecology. Also huge changes in how people feel about the environment, how they're interacting with the environment, what kind of things they'll purchase, how they'll live. Economic changes. You're talking about jobs and political changes. And so these are all the areas we could look at. So we talked about groups that we look at, and we can look at these areas. Values, social, technological, environmental, economic, political. All right, so if we look at trends, there's emerging issues. So there's a few kind of maverick people that come up with some wild idea or some new way of living. And then there's a few people that start doing it, and then it becomes a trend. And eventually it becomes mainstream. So where are we going to find this kind of information? All right, the emerging issues are going to come from radicals and mystics and scientists and artists and really fringe information. Once it gets to be a trend, then it's going to be in newspapers, magazines, websites, journals, and blogs. And once it's mainstream, it's going to be in governments. And here it says, the time for emerging issues to mainstream varies somewhere between 18 to 36 years. Although I think it's happening a little faster. I think things are speeding up. I think things are speeding up. Yeah, yeah. Well, I put this together 3 years ago. All right, so generally when we're looking at what's happening, we're looking at here. Generally, we're trying to figure out, you know, we're looking, something's already become a trend, and we're looking at when it's become a trend and when it's going mainstream. But you also want to look a little bit on the fringes. You also want to look a little bit on the fringes. Now, where to look? Obviously, there's the internet, but there isn't only the internet. The internet is not the only source of information. There's also sites you can go called future sites. So there's non-devotees who professionally scan for trends. And like I get a regular email newsletter of what are the emerging trends in different areas in the world. Then hard publications, print publications, blogs, social networking site, and talking to people, spending time with people and talking to them, visiting people, going into places where people are. And we'll, at the very end of our presentation, we'll have some quotes. But did Krishna do this when he was king of Dwarka? Yes, he did. Did Lord Ramachandra do this? Yes, they did. They went out into the public, often in disguise. You know, what are people doing? What are they talking about? All the different places one could look. Newspapers, Twitter, websites, blog, Wikipedias, podcasts, videos, news sites, newsletters, magazines, books, book reviews, presentations, reports, surveys, interviews, seminars, chat rooms, trend observers, advertisers, philosophers, sociologists, management gurus, consultants, research experts, universities, so many places. And some of us may have more access to some of these than others. Some of us may feel more comfortable with some of these than others. In other words, there's lots and lots and lots and lots of sources. There's a famous story of a man who was walking down the street and he saw a wall with lots of targets and arrows in the bullseye of each target. Wow, who shot all those arrows? And he found one young boy and he said, well, I first shoot the arrows and then I draw the bullseyes around them. You can be gathering information wherever you go and then see how does this relate. Gather information, pay attention, listen, observe. There's many, many sources all around us. Now, how do we know when we found something useful? Now, it's good to have your antenna out in general, but it's also a good idea to look for, okay, I'm going to be looking for trends in technology. Depends on what your service field is. Or I'm going to be looking for trends in education. Or I'm going to be looking for trends in music. Right? And I'm going to be looking in these different groups. I'm going to be looking at ISKCON members. I'm going to be looking at non-ISKCON Gaudiya groups. I'm going to be looking at Vaishnava groups that are not Gaudiya. I'm going to be looking at Hindus. I'm going to be looking at other Eastern religions. I'm going to be looking at New Age groups. I'm going to be looking at other religions. I'm going to be looking at the world. So I'm going to be looking at groups, and I'm going to be looking for certain trends. So I usually have some issue in mind. So does it help me understand my issue? Does it help me have a new way of seeing it? Does it help me to explore trends? These are the kind of questions that we ask to decide, okay, is this really useful? Does it challenge some existing assumptions? Might it indicate some kind of radical alternative? Now, some of the stuff we find, we may say, oh, this is just rubbish. You know, nothing useful here. But before we decide that, we should stop because, again, we might just be hitting one of our assumptions. Is it possible for what we found to really have some value? And again, I run into this kind of attitude where sometimes I'll talk to leaders in various ISKCON projects and say, Prabhu, Maharaj, that, did you know that this is what's happening? Oh, that's not important. Oh, I don't need to consider that. But it ends up being something important. It ends up being something that they need to consider. So it's easy to just say, oh, this isn't an important trend, we're not going to consider it. So what do you specifically do? Okay, so there's again the things happening, this is the open mind, and then the open heart is for the trends and the drivers. What's happening, and are the things that are happening, do they indicate a trend? And if there's a trend, what's driving the trend? So I'm seeing what's happening is many people are not marrying or they're marrying very late. Okay, is that a trend? Yes, it's a trend. What's driving that trend? What's driving that trend is it's harder to get jobs. What's driving that trend is propaganda about you have to first find yourself and know who you are. What's also driving that trend is it's harder and harder for people to find someone to marry. What's also driving the trend is people being afraid of divorce. If I marry too soon, it won't work out. Right? These are the things that are driving the trends. So first, when you start looking around, you're going to just be finding, oh, there's the things that are happening. What's happening? People are doing this, people are doing that. And then you can start thinking, oh, okay, I'm seeing this particular trend. I'm seeing this particular trend. And then finally, of course, you have to figure out what's driving it. Because it's just, okay, what's happening here? What's driving it? Because that's what we're particularly interested in. Why? Because Krishna consciousness is supposed to help people with the driving needs underneath their actions. You can't just change people's actions. You have to hit the driving needs under the actions. You can't just notice where people aren't cooking anymore. And then just get up on the Vyasa Sun and say, you've all got to cook! That's not enough to just say, okay, here's this action, people don't cook. It's become a trend that people think ketchup is a spice. You know? That's the trend. And then just say, okay, change your behavior. What's driving it? Why is that happening? You know, what are the drivers? The drivers are the people that now both men and women are working. People are working very long hours. People have very long commutes. And there's so many prepared and semi-prepared foods available. I was just hearing a class the other day where Prabhupada said how when poor people got married, they had to have land because otherwise you couldn't eat. And he said, but now you can go to the shop and purchase food. He said, formerly it wasn't like that. You couldn't just go to the shop and purchase food. And Prabhupada was talking about purchasing raw ingredients. Right? What to speak of going to the shop and purchasing meals and so forth and so on. So what's driving it? So if we want to help people to offer to Krishna food cooked by devotees, then we have to look at the driver, not just the trends and the things that are happening. Do you all follow? Many, many times in ISKCON, first of all, we don't even notice what's happening. You don't even know what's happening. If we know what's happening, we don't identify the trends. If we identify the trends, we just want to hit people over the head about it. Stop that trend! Now! But wait a minute. Ah, I can't. So as we start looking for the drivers, then we're looking for what are the connections. And only then can we really have preaching and programs that are relevant and relatable to people's real needs and concern. Now, how to report one's findings. So this is, we're talking about a formal approach where you've really set up a team. And what I'd like to see is that we started having at least continental teams. That we had, you know, that each continent, we had a team of 10 devotees who had their business to do this kind of scanning and report to the yatras. In one temple, it's going to be hard to do this on a regular basis and have such a divergent team and so forth. Of course, something is better than nothing. But here we're talking about really having an organized team and reporting your findings, where people give reports on various trends and what they've discovered, and having questions to prompt discussion between the members. So this you have in the papers that you're getting, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. And there's all kinds of sharing platforms, of course. There's now all different kinds of wikis where you can share documents together, and Dropbox and Google Documents. And then what you want to come up with, remember on your U, you want to start coming up with prototypes. Okay, what's the prototype we're going to come up with to deal with these drivers? How are we going to adjust our programs, and what kind of prototype we're going to have to come up with? So this means, again, that the team doesn't exist in isolation, but it's connected to action. Now, if it's just you, then you can connect your scanning and your reporting to your own project and your own action, or if it's just a small team. But if we're going to have separate teams, we want to make sure they're connected to people who are acting. We want to make sure we have this open will. We talked about Krishna's quality, and Krishna's quality, right? The power of understanding time, place, and circumstance, and someone who performs actions. So it's not just enough to know. You want to take the knowledge and you want to translate that knowledge into action. And that can be with small prototypes. Let's try it. Okay, what are we going to do to help people learn how to cook when people don't know how to cook? How are we going to help people in the grihastha ashram when nobody gets married anymore? How are we going to help people find careers when there's no jobs? Does this everybody understand? How are we going to train people how to chant 16 rounds a day and 3 Gayatris when they don't live in an ashram? How are we going to train people how to be clean when they've never lived in an ashram? So to prototype, what are we going to do to act on this knowledge? So we want to go from knowledge to action. How might we respond in ISKCON? Okay, what we're going to do in part 3 is we're going to do a little hands-on work that you won't be able to fall asleep in unless you're really tired. And so we're going to plan a scan in part 3. So if you could come back at 8:15. Thank you. Hare Krishna.